Good evening. A new travel ban in the works, new sanctions against Iran, and the arrest of housing activists in Brooklyn. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Friday, January 10th, 2020. The Trump administration has been preparing to expand its travel ban, which bars individuals from seven countries from entering the United States. The draft documents obtained by BuzzFeed do not contain the names of the new countries to be added to the list. Iran, Syria, Libya, Venezuela, North Korea, Yemen, and Somalia are already subject to the travel ban, also known as the Muslim ban, after Trump campaigned on a promise to stop Muslims from entering the United States. Meanwhile, at the border, since the assassination of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani, more than 60 people, all American citizens, have been held for questioning at Washington State's crossings with Canada. The Iranian Americans were held for hours. They were returning from work trips and vacations and were trying to get home to the United States. Some were held in a waiting room and questioned for up to 10 hours, according to CARE. Speaking before Congress, Representative Mark Takano, a Democrat from California, had this to say about the border. Border stops.
America is less safe when the words and actions of our leaders cast unnecessary suspicion on our fellow citizens. America is less safe when families, including children, are targeted by government officials based on their ethnicity or by their country of origin. Reports of unjust, prolonged detentions of Iranian Americans and permanent residents at our borders should be alarming to everyone. It calls to mind the unjust internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. My own parents were toddlers in Japanese American internment camps, and they, along with 120,000 others, were unjustly incarcerated, having committed no crimes or acts of disloyalty. What happened to my family was the result of a failure of political leadership. All of us in this body have a duty to remain vigilant and to defend the dignity of all citizens. To do nothing is to be complicit in violating the spirit of our Constitution and the individual liberties it guarantees.
Congressional Representative Mark Takano, a Democrat from California. And in breaking news, Palm Beach, Florida police said they arrested a man armed with a number of knives on a bridge just north of President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort. Local news outlets claim the man's arsenal included a machete, two knives, a pickaxe, and $2,200 in cash, and that a bomb squad was searching his vehicle found at the Palm Beach International Airport. One TV station claimed he's an Iranian American. The arrest comes just days after Iran fired missiles at two U.S. bases in Iraq in revenge for the U.S. drone attack that killed Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps General Qasem Soleimani at the Baghdad International Airport. The bridge where the suspect was arrested is less than 3 miles north of Mar-a-Lago, the resort Trump favors on the weekends and holidays. And Tehran said on Friday it wanted to download black box recordings itself from a Ukrainian airliner crash that killed all 176 people aboard. Some Western sources say they suspect the plane was brought down by an Iranian missile, probably by mistake. Iran denies the Boeing 737-800 was downed by a missile. The Iranian Fars news agency reported that on Saturday, Iran would announce the reason for the crash. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has blamed an Iranian surface-to-air missile for downing the plane with 63 Canadians on board, although he said it may have been unintentional. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board said it had designated a representative to join the probe of the crash that would include Canada and Ukraine. And in more Iran news, Secretary of Treasury Steve Mnuchin announced new sanctions promised by President Trump against Iran earlier today.
The president is issuing an executive order authorizing the imposition of additional sanctions against any individual owning, operating, trading with, or assisting sectors of the Iranian economy, including construction, manufacturing, textiles, and mining. And let me be clear, these will be both primary and secondary sanctions.
Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin. But most of the attention at today's news conference centers on Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and his definition of the word imminent. An imminent threat is the administration's rationale for the killing of Soleimani.
What is your definition of imminent?
This was going to happen, and American lives were at risk. and we would have been culpably negligent, as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said, we would have been culpably negligent had we not recommended to the president that he take this action in Qasem Soleimani. He made the right call, and America is safer as a result of that.
We're going to try to do one question for everybody, just so that as many people can get questions. So I don't mean to cut you off, but we're trying to go ahead.
But reporters persisted, asking Pompeo if he was giving the media more information than the White House had given to Congress at a meeting Wednesday night. That's at the heart of Democrats and some Republicans' argument that Trump violated the law by not informing lawmakers before the attack.
Last night, the president said it was a threat to embassies, including to our Baghdad embassy. Why can you say that here, and the president could say it at a rally in Toledo, but no one said it to lawmakers behind closed doors in a classified setting, as multiple senators have since said?
We did.
You said, so the senators yes. are lying when they say that?
We told them about the imminent threat. All of the intelligence that we've briefed, that you've heard today, I assure you, in an unclassified setting, we provide in the classified setting as well.
To be clear, you told them that embassies were to be targeted. That was the imminent threat.
I'm not going to talk about the details of what we shared in the classified setting, but make no mistake about it. Those leaders, those members of Congress who want to go access this same intelligence can see that very same intelligence that will reflect what I described to you and what the president said last night.
Is that threat now gone with Soleimani gone?
Threats are never gone.
Pompeo went on to justify the administration's claim they had intelligence pointing to the imminent Iranian attack, when Trump has so often denigrated the intelligence agencies.
I served as a CIA director for the first year and a half of this administration. I watched the president rely on the work that the intelligence community did for the entire time I served as the head of the Central Intelligence Agency. I've watched him rely on the capable men and women who are delivering exquisite information to the executive branch. I watch the president have confidence in that information. We all challenge their work. We have to make sure we get it right. The intelligence community is not flawless. We get it wrong. In this case, the intelligence community got it fundamentally right.
Pompeo then addressed Trump's stated refusal at a campaign rally last night in Akron, Ohio, to go along with the Iraqi government's call for all U.S. troops to leave.
We are happy to continue the conversation with the Iraqis about what the right structure is. Our mission set there is very clear. We've been there to perform a training mission to help the Iraqi security forces be successful and to continue the campaign against ISIS, to continue the counter-Daesh campaign. We're going to continue that mission, but as times change and we get to a place where we can deliver upon what I believe and the president believes is our right structure, with fewer resources dedicated to that mission, we will do so.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. An Iraqi-American commentator, Ed Gerar, says thousands of Iraqis went into the streets today to protest both Trump and Iran's refusal to leave the country.
It is really shocking the way that the Trump administration is disregarding the voice of the Iraqi people and the voice of the Iraqi parliament and the voice of the Iraqi prime minister. The Iraqi government has officially requested that all U.S. troops leave the country. According to the U.S. own logic, the United States is there under the invitation of Iraq. It is not an occupation. It is not an occupying force. So according to that logic, I think the Trump administration should start planning to leave the country immediately.
Do you think they're going to do that?
We have to see what's the reaction from the Iraqi street. Today, tens of thousands of Iraqis demonstrated in Baghdad and other cities in the south of Iraq with very strong chants against the U.S. intervention and against other interventions, including Iran. Iraqis chanted no to the U.S. and no to Iran and demanded that both the U.S. and Iran stop messing with their country and using their country as a playground for a proxy war. The demands are escalating from the Iraqi people. I think the Iraqi parliament and the Iraqi government are also under so much pressure to deliver on this very specific demand by the Iraqi people to rid their country of all foreign troops.
Do you think that the protest movement will be returning to the streets of Iraq?
Yes. Today we saw a very strong return. There were demonstrations planned all around the country on January 10th. Tens of thousands of Iraqis showed up to Tahrir Square, the other squares in Najaf, in Nasiriyah and Basra, and they looked very united in their that all foreign interventions end in Iraq as soon as possible.
If the Trump administration doubles down and starts sending more troops in, I mean, they're already bringing 4,500, doubling the number of troops allegedly that they're going to be putting into the country. It seems like the opposite of what people want is happening.
Many Iraqis have been saying this since 2003. Whether or not they liked Saddam Hussein, they were opposed to the U.S. military intervention and opposed to the U.S. military occupation. The U.S. has disregarded the wish of the Iraqi people for a long time, and I don't think many Iraqis are confused about why the United States is in Iraq or what is the U.S. presence. Iraqis view the U.S. as an unwelcome occupier who has been messing with their country for decades. So what the Trump administration is saying today is not new. It is a repetition of what the U.S. policy has been in Iraq. The U.S. will continue to interfere in Iraq against the Iraqi people's will and against the very clear calls of Iraqis and their parliament and now even their government for the U.S. to leave that country.
Could this lead to violence, more violence?
In a disregard of calls to withdraw and disregard to calls for political resolution always lead to more mess and more violence, whether it's in Iraq or elsewhere. And I am hoping that we will start pressuring our government here in the U.S., whether by talking to our members of Congress or by contacting the White House directly, to say that even for us as U.S. Americans, as U.S. taxpayers, we demand that the U.S. troops withdraw from Iraq. We demand that this illegal and immoral occupation comes to an end.
What about the other groups in Iraq? Because they have in the north, of course, around Erbil, the Kurdish part of Iraq, which seems to almost welcome some forces up there, seem to welcome some amount of U.S. intervention to defend them. And then you have ISIS and the Sunni people. I mean, how is this all going to play out with these groups in Iraq?
If you look at the ruling parties in Iraq, many of them are tolerant and supportive of continuing foreign intervention. And some groups are closer to the U.S., some groups are closer to Iran or to Saudi Arabia or to Turkey, etc. Bottom line is that when it comes to the Iraqi public, Iraqis are critical of this Iraqi government, this Iraqi regime that was installed by the U.S. and its allies in 2003. They're critical because they see it as a client state that needs foreign powers to exist. It's a state that relies on foreign interventions to exist. So, of course, you will hear voices of Iraqi politicians saying, we need Iran to stay, we need the U.S. to stay, we need Saudi Arabia or Turkey to stay. But what we're seeing in the streets of Iraq is that millions of Iraqis have been participating in these protests in the last 3 or 4 months. And the narrative on the street is that Iraqis are saying no to all interventions. We don't need Iran to protect us from the U.S. We don't need the U.S. to protect us from Iran. Iraqis will protect Iraq from both. Iraqis will protect Iraq from ISIS and from other groups that came to Iraq after the 2003 invasion. So there is an awakening among the Iraqi public that these interventionist narratives that does not recognize Iraqis' agency in protecting their own country are not okay anymore.
Iraqi American commentator Raed Jarar. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Last night, Trump spoke to thousands of his adoring fans in Akron, Ohio. The MAGA hat wearing, cheering crowd became enraged at one point in the rally when a demonstrator was ejected from the hall.
You know, when I was a little bit newer to this game, They're going home to mommy. It's a beautiful sight. Thank you, security. Do we love law enforcement, by the way?
Trump then went on to blame the media for negative publicity towards the attack he ordered on the Iranian general.
They want us to tell them so that they can leak it to their friends in the corrupt media. You got to say, though, that's a lot of media, right? That's the way the Academy Awards used to look when it was successful. Then they started hitting us all the time, and it became unsuccessful. I love it. I love it, actually. Oh, they have some bad ones here tonight. They have some really bad ones, some real sick ones. They have one good one, by the way. One good one. They have one good one.
Trump then went on to call Bernie Sanders crazy and personally disparage House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, but his most vicious swipe was aimed at House Foreign Intelligence Chair Adam Schiff.
Calling crooked Adam Schiff. He's so crooked. He's so crooked. Shifty Schiff. Say, gee, Adam, how you doing? Listen, we have the world's number one terrorist, killed thousands and thousands of people. We'd like to set up a meeting so we can discuss his execution. Would you be willing to meet? Well, I won't be able to make it this week. Well, you know, he's traveling fast. We got him lined up, Adam. You little pencil neck. Inches. He buys the smallest shirt collar you can get, and it's loose.
And in local news, by the way, that was President Trump speaking last night in Akron, Ohio. In local news, a group of activists on Thursday, citing a court order, mounted a protest in front of a controversial Crown Heights high-rise development. The protest led to a tense standoff with police officers and resulted in construction workers shutting down the site for the day, as reported in The Gothamist. Last April, community members scored a rare legal victory after a Brooklyn State Supreme Court judge issued a temporary restraining order on the project that specifically prohibited the pouring of concrete at the project site located at 931 Carroll Street, not far from the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. Community activist Alicia Boyd of the Movement to Protect the People.
Temporary restraining orders supersede any building permit.
Any
city agency. The court is the highest authority in New York City, and yet the police department is refusing, is ignoring the temporary restraining order, refuses to recognize it, and is telling us, oh, well, they don't have to, they can close down today, but they might be back tomorrow. No, we want the police department to recognize this temporary restraining order, to state that it is in effect, and to tell the developers that they cannot come back until this restraining order has been lifted by the court.
Right.
No construction, no nothing. And yet they are violating. The police are allowing them to violate this temporary restraining order and demanding that we leave and that they stay. And we're not going anywhere.
And after a debate with police officers, several of the protesters were arrested.
This prevents any construction work on the site, including excavation or disturbance of soil. As you can see, that's exactly what they've been doing. This temporary restraining order has been in effect since November 26th of 2019, and it stays into effect until another judge or the existing judge lifts this stay. Any permits that have been issued by the Department of Buildings does not supersede this temporary restraining order, and we're expecting for the 71st Precinct to recognize this temporary restraining order with its raised seal. And we have a raised seal on
it. The legal department, our legal is telling us that's a civil matter, and that you cannot block trucks coming in and out.
And later on, people were arrested. And we have joining us live on the line, Alicia Boyd, who is her voice you just heard, leading that protest against this construction site in Crown Heights near the Botanic Garden. Welcome to WBAI, Alicia Boyd of the Movement to Protect the People.
Thank you.
Great having you on. All right, let me begin by asking you exactly where is this project and what does it entail and why are you opposed to it?
This is a rezoning that was completed in December of 2018, about almost a year ago, in which 18 lots were rezoned, and which broke a community plan with height limits of 6 to 7 stories along the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens. In 1991, a community plan was set in place by the city and specifically to protect the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens and the community from buildings over 13 stories. In 2017, 2018, developers have put in a proposal at which was granted and approved by City Councilwoman Lori Cumbo, who's the majority leader of City Council, and it was eventually passed. And then we challenged it on Article 78 in April, basically stating that the project had not undergo proper environmental review, that the developers had misrepresented information in the EAS, that and they did not take a hard look at certain environmental consequences, and thus this project and this rezoning is unlawful, and it needs to go back, and it needs to be null and voided, and a new process begin.
So what was Go ahead.
We then was able to obtain a temporary restraining order in April, which prevented any development, any concrete pouring, any development on the sites to ensure that the developers would not move ahead and build anyway while we were challenging this rezoning in a court of law. Then in November, we found out that one of the developers were attempting to get around the temporary restraining order by getting the Department of Buildings to issue them an environmental cleanup permit, which basically was a guise to, again, lay down the foundation and pour cement. As a result, the Judge Bodie clarified our temporary restraining order and extended it and basically said, no, you cannot not only not pour cement, but you cannot disturb the soil. And that way, our case can move forward. If they are allowed to pour the cement and disturb the soil, then we lose the case without the case even being decided because they will be allowed to build.
So if they actually begin work, that gives them a right to violate the order.
No. What it means is that the whole idea of the challenge is to state that they cannot build the 17-story building. If they begin to lay the foundation and begin that process, it's historically proven that no court in New York City will make them destroy that building if we prevail in our case. So that means it's the moment that they lay down the cement, our case will be lost. That means we would automatically lose our case.
So what happened on Thursday?
Well, on Thursday, we found out day before that they were that the Department of Buildings, who was on the lawsuit, had issued them a permit to build and to lay down the foundation. And so we first went to the Department of Buildings, showed them the temporary restraining order, which they already had, but we 311 calls were done. They refused to respond to us, said that it was going to take some time for them to look at the paperwork and decide. And then we got further phone calls and videos that there were a line of trucks coming in at 2 o'clock in the morning, ready to go ahead and start laying down cement. So we went, we organized a protest at 8 a.m. in front of the development site, and about 20 people showed up, and we stood in front of them, and we said, you cannot disturb the soil. We have a temporary restraining order. The police came. And the police said it was a civil matter. However, once you break a temporary restraining order, it now becomes a criminal matter. And the police refused to recognize that. They refused to recognize the fact that a temporary restraining order is now in place, and once you break it, because it is a court order, then it becomes a criminal matter, continues to say that, no, it's a civil matter. So we then stood there and said, no, we're right, you're wrong, and then we got arrested.
How long were you in jail for?
We were in jail for about 4 hours.
And what happened? Was there any construction that went on?
From what I heard, no. They started clearing out some stuff, and then they had agreed to close it down. The permit is still valid. It's still up. We are going to the appellate court on Monday because the developers are now appealing. to the appellate court, and we will be having a conference.
Are you calling people to come out and be there?
Yes, Monday, this Monday coming up at 10 a.m. in front of the appellate court in Brooklyn. I think it's 45 Monroe Street. It's downtown Brooklyn.
All right. We only have a minute left. I just wanted to have one last question. This is similar to things that are going on in other neighborhoods, Inwood, Two Bridges, East River, Coastal Resiliency, where the de Blasio administration is going full ahead with this, right?
Yes, but this is the first time that a temporary restraining order has ever been violated. Temporary restraining orders are very strong. I've never seen a case in which a developer and the city will willingly break a temporary restraining order, and yet both the city and the developers have broken this temporary restraining order, and that you're not going to see. But we will be at 45 Monroe Street in downtown Brooklyn at the appellate court at 10 a.m.
Okay, on Monday. Thank you very much, Alicia Boyd. Thank you very much for joining us on WBAI. And that's some of the news for Friday, January 10th, 2020. The news is engineered by Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.